This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time, Prior Faithful. Time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. We've gathered the entire 97.3 The Fan crew together to bring you the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Here's your host, Ben Higgins.
From the Oakland A's, and welcome.
Flip a coin.
Is it the happy edition of our Padres Roundtable, or is it the desperate edition? Today should be everybody in a fairly good mood, at least everybody who is here. Let's take a little roll call today. I was not expecting Tony Gwynn Jr. to be here, as he is in New York with the San Diego Padres. We do have Craig Elston from Annie and Elston.
Present.
Sitting to my left, next to Craig, is Stephen Woods.
Here.
I know you. We do a show together every morning.
Just did it.
And then we have Craig's co-host, Annie Heilbrun. Hello, Annie.
Hello, Ben.
And then we have an empty chair. I don't know where Chris is today, but that's okay. If he wants to slip in at any moment, love to have him otherwise.
I didn't know, again, this was an optional thing, because from everything I've been told,
I didn't think it was.
I think next week, the four of us don't show up, and we just see who's here.
Let's opt out.
See if Chris guys, you're going to carry another hour for us.
Ben will be here by himself.
I can't wait for someone to walk in and just sit there. Who knows who?
Let's just grab one of the sales guys, bring him in at this point.
Do you think so?
Fan perspective.
Fine, yeah, fan perspective.
It's an empty chair. Anyone in the building wants to come in and join us, please feel free.
Well, it's symbolic.
It's
of
the sweep of
yeah, no losses. Sweep. Look at that.
I know Chris on the show said he wouldn't show up if they got swept.
Something, but not
swept. But maybe
swept.
He meant if they swept.
This is
all right,
amazing.
Let's get going here, because sometimes I feel silly talking about this team, the way you emotionally swing back and forth, because baseball shouldn't be that way. Baseball's a long-term season, 162 games. The sky can't be falling every week, and they can't be going to the World Series every week. So I'm going to try to keep things a little bit moderate today. And we've gone down this road a few times before. A good series, a good week, climbing two or three games above 500. So my first question, Craig, is this time any different? Have the Padres turned a corner with their sweep of the A's, or are we expecting them to once again continue to be drawn back to that 500 mark for at least the foreseeable future, or is something different after this week?
I mean, you know, we just won 5 out of 6, so it's easy to say that something's different. There's one thing you can point to, which is that it was reported this morning in Kevin Acey's newsletter that the team had a meeting prior to Friday's game, and that they emphasized a lot of the things that, honestly, we've been harping on for the last couple of months, the seeming lack of focus at critical moments and in certain series compared to others. And it turns out, while the message coming from some parts of the club was that, no, that was never the case, the leaders of this team, such as Joe Musgrove and Jerickson Profar, have now admitted to that. Jake Cronenworth did as well last week. So what I do think has changed is that they found this as a point of emphasis. The question then becomes, how long do you hang on to that focus, or does it waver again?
Annie, a corner turned, or simply another peak on a season that will be filled with peaks and valleys?
TBD. Be determined. I don't know. You know, I was looking at the record. Is this the question that you were asking in Ben and Woods about the differences?
No, we'll get to those later. The
question, so I looked up, where were they 72 games into the season last year? They were 2 games under .500. They were 35 and 37. Right now they're 2 games over .500, 37 and 35. Technically better, kind of the same-ish. But I've liked what, you know, like you guys were talking about earlier, it's been more fun to watch a lot of these games. I don't know. That's a really good question if it's going to be a page-turner.
But as you point out, without maybe somewhat shocking home runs by Kyle Higashioka and Donovan Solano and Jackson Merrill, they could easily be 35 and 37 and in the exact same spot. And Woods, we talked a little bit about it during our show. They've had to work very hard to be 37 and 35. So is this a corner turning moment for the San Diego Padres?
No, I don't think you can turn a corner on June 12th. And you know, again, they've shown nothing that they can string more than four wins together, five wins at a time. You know, and it was really important, though, to take care of business. And when you're playing the Oakland A's, scrappy as they may be, as many home runs as they hit, as good of a back end of a bullpen as they have, taking care of business is something they haven't really done against the lower tier team. So, yeah, they do get credit for that, certainly. And and the way that they fought their tails off to win that game yesterday, yeah, they get credit for that. But I don't see it as a page turner yet or a season corner turner yet.
Craig, you brought up the team meeting that the Padres reportedly had after the five-game losing streak. And I get it. The face you present publicly is sometimes different than what's going on behind the scenes. In fact, I would fully expect that from any baseball team. But sometimes I feel like we, as fans, as the media, are made to feel crazy when we bring up topics like, why can't you sweep a team? And we're told, well, yeah, you're winning series. Things are going well. But then Jackson Merrill hits a walk-off home run. And what's the first thing he says after the game on television and radio? We really needed to get over that hump and sweep a series. It's really important to finish these things off. And I'm going, well, yeah, I said that to the manager, and I've said that for weeks, and I keep getting it downplayed every time I say it. But you are actually thinking the things that we think are important are also important to you behind the scenes.
Yeah, and you know, things have changed a lot, even just in this century, Ben, even back to when you and I were prowling around at Qualcomm Stadium for 4 years on pre and post. Like, and Annie and I have talked about this a lot, every single team in every major league sport now has its own communications department, has its own in-house media, has its own literal, like, house organ, or at least metaphorical house organ that's playing the tunes. And I think each team now has a meeting where they say, we have to not just present, we have to command the narrative. And we have to take control of what we believe will be the narratives of the season and not let the media create those narratives and have us react to it. We want to create the narrative and make you react to it. And I think the Padres do, frankly, a lot of that. And I think it's something that now is infused through from management, even through the manager's comments. But the players tell a lot more of a truthful story. And I am very appreciative when I hear the truth, because it does comport with not making us feel like we're crazy or to this or to that for following the same season everyone else is.
And Annie, you've spent time on the actual broadcasts of the team, and I'm sure they try to send those messages out that they want to get out. And the Padres aren't the only one. You know, as Craig mentioned, it's a common thing in sports, control that narrative. But you can't really escape the most important narrative, no matter what team you are. Your record is your narrative. And you can't, at the end of the year, you cannot escape that narrative that will tell the story ultimately in the end of your season.
That's absolutely right. And I mean, in so many ways now, if you are not part of the narrative that the team, any team, wants to get out there, you are fired. You are let go, you know, if you're not kind of rowing that same boat. And so I think that while you can spin some of that, you can't, like you said, you're absolutely right, you can't escape the record, and you can't escape where you are in the standings. You can't escape whether you're in the playoffs or out of the playoffs. And you know, players do hear a lot of this. Like, players, some of them don't get too deep in the weeds, but they hear the same things that we're talking about, and that's why it comes up, you know. They also agree with it a lot of the times. In that team meeting, I learned about this team meeting over this last homestand. Those were a lot of the topics. It was winning against losing teams. It was playing better at home. It was being aggressive throughout the game, not just in certain innings. It was all the things that we talk about as well, you know. And so they had a lot of team meetings last year, too, that didn't amount to much of anything, right? Or they would try, but it's not really the team meeting. It is that, like, your leaders coming together and talking about it, but it's that they believe in it. It's that they're going to believe in whatever whatever they're telling themselves. It's not necessarily even that they change a whole lot. It's that they believe in what they're talking about. And that is, like, their own, I guess, narrative that they have in the clubhouse. And that's what's important. And so if they're believing it and they're buying into it, then that's what you want. And that's what we've been seeing, I think, over this last week.
And Woods, you know, I bought into the spin last year that that team was going to be fine. Look at their run differential. They're going to eventually, water will find its level.
Yeah.
They will get to where they need to be at the end of the season. And if not win the division, they'll certainly be in the playoffs and have a chance in October. I bought into it last season. Well, I thought that that was actually an accurate spin. But like, as I just said to Annie, you can't escape the ultimate narrative, and that is your record, and they were never able to escape it last year.
Well, don't feel bad, because I think you, along with everybody else, did as well. And you watch, you know, there was that feeling last year that it's not, guys, relax. It's gonna pop eventually. Everyone's going to get going at the same time. Guys are going to get healthy, and it's going to, they're going to cruise. They're going to rip off 15 out of 16, because look at the talent this team has. It never materialized, and it was often inexplicable with this team. This year has been different. It has been different, and we did talk about the massive amount of things that have gone right for this team to just stay two games over 500. They've expended a ton of energy to get to this point. Can they keep that up? That's the billion-dollar question for me, is can they keep this weird pace of, like, two up, two down, two up, two down? I'm so happy they haven't fallen off the cliff like other teams have, but it's going to be interesting to watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, from there San Diego State University, left-hander.
I went to the wrong hand.
Chris Ello, welcome to the roundtable.
About time,
everybody.
You get me involved.
Did you think
the
this was a 10 after start, like a baseball game? It's like one of those 05.
Yeah, pregame.
Is it fair traffic? What was it?
Yeah, I live so far away.
That would have been my excuse.
It's a combination of issues.
It's all right. Welcome.
Sorry, guys.
Well, you haven't missed too much.
Better late than never.
Other than my first question, which was, is this sweep a turning of the corner or just another peak in an unending cease of peaks and valleys for the 2024 Padres?
Wouldn't it be wonderful to look back on those two home runs and say that changed an entire season?
Some may call it a roller coaster.
Although in a lot of ways it seems... Right. Yeah, not me. In a lot of ways it seems to have... kind of changed the whole outlook of the season, though, isn't it? Right? I mean, these two home runs have put everybody in a frame of mind now that everything is fantastic and wonderful. So
until tomorrow.
Yeah,
until tomorrow, at least. Yeah.
Is there another game?
There's a game. We do have another game tomorrow.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that they're just going to go on a complete roll right now and take off, but... I don't know.
It's awesome to see, though.
Does anybody know?
Awesome to see.
You know what? I will say there's one thing that I did change my opinion of just yesterday on one of those home runs, and we'll get to that next. This is our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And that was not the walk-off home run, and it was neither of Donovan Solano's home runs, but it was the first home run by Jackson Merrill, which he not only hit off a left-handed pitcher, but he hit over 400 feet to center field. And I wasn't sure that Jackson Merrill would do that, if he ever did it, for another 3 or 4 years, to add that kind of power element to his game. So my next question, and I'll start with Annie over here, is what do you envision the final product of Jackson Merrill being? If it goes well for the Padres, you know, we're talking maybe a couple, 3, 4 years down the line as he continues to develop. But are we looking at a superstar player, a perennial all-star? Are we just looking for is he a solid piece of a winning championship team? Where are we looking at the finished product of Jackson Merrill in your crystal ball?
I hate to put ceilings on guys. I hate to put limits on guys. I love hearing Fernando Tatis Jr. talk about Jackson Merrill and what he sees in him, because he sees a complete superstar. Same with David Peralta. He sees a superstar. They've got lockers next to each other in the clubhouse. Jackson Merrill, I don't think he's gotten into his man strength yet. He's got more weight he can put on. He's got more power in the bank, I think. And I love what Victor Rodriguez is talking about with him, which is learn how to hit singles in the big leagues. Learn how to hit singles. Learn how they're trying to pitch you. And then everything else is going to come. And you hear Jackson Merrill talk about it, and he's like, I've got more doubles in me. I've got more power in me. I've got the ability to do more than just hit singles in the big leagues. And for Jackson Merrill, I can't imagine what it would be like for Jackson Merrill to be on a team that loses all the time, because he would just go out of his mind. He loves to win. He's a competitor, you know? And so for him, when you put all that together, I think he could absolutely be a superstar in this league. I don't know if he will be, but I think he could be.
It's funny, Woods, how quickly we forget how young some guys are. I mean, you forget Tatis and Morejon are still young ball players in the big scheme of things. Jackson Merrill just turned 21 21, an age when most guys are probably still 2 or 3 years away from their big league debut, to consistently contribute the way he has been doing, where do you see Jackson evolving in his game as he, you know, is a Padre likely for the years to come here?
Well, we kind of did this question on one of the first round tables. Craig had a great comp for it. It was Christian Yelich.
I'm just going to stay with that.
Yeah.
You can take my answer.
I figured as much. And
your third.
Just so you know, I was paying attention, and I've been thinking about it since you said it. And that is a really good comp for Jackson Merrill, and I think we would all sign up for that right now.
Did Yelich win an MVP, right?
Yeah, and I remain massive.
So that's a pretty high comparison.
Yeah. I mean, I remain massively impressed with his at-bats. And really, his defense as well. Had a bad break on a ball yesterday, made up for it. It's going to happen. It's not, you get fooled out there in center field a lot. He's learning a new position and being a big leaguer for the first time and contributing in a major way, walking games off, huge hit against the Dodgers off a lefty in Vesia. I mean, he's massively impressive. And you could tell at spring training, he doesn't know what he doesn't know. So he's going to go out there and continue to try to barrel the ball, and good things are going to happen for that dude as long as he does that.
And I'm going to, because he took Yelich,
yeah,
I'm going to just take it a slightly different way, something we've chatted about a little and has a little forward kick to it. And I'll say Corey Seager.
Ooh.
Because there's a decent chance Merrill's this team's shortstop next year.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. I think that the guy we have at shortstop is going to be starting for another team. I think that they're not going to want to move Xander back 1 year after moving him off. And I think Toddy, who I know Annie would put at short, and probably would like
to. Short. Yeah.
I think he would like to.
He would love it.
If he's won 2 straight gold gloves, I don't know if they're going to do that. And I think he's got that combination of bat to ball, good eye, and emergent power. You know, Seager was a 300 hitter before he was a 30 home run hitter. So it's another, and I'm just thinking about size, frame, growing into your body. That's another guy you could compare to.
I guess I may have tempered my expectations a little bit too much, because when you said Christian Yelich or Corey Seager, I thought, yeah, we could see that when he's 25 or 6. And I wasn't expecting to see yesterday what he did, you know, 2 home runs, youngest player ever with a walk-off home run, 2 home run game, 400 feet to center field off a left-hander. I thought, yeah, if we're lucky in 3 or 4 years, we'll see some of that. And we're already, Chris, seeing a little bit of it. How excited are you by this guy?
I'm really excited, but apparently we're the only ones seeing this, because I went through something online no less than a week ago, and it listed the top 10 candidates in the National League for MVP to this point of the season, Cy Young Award, Rookie of the Year, National League Rookie of the Year. Guess where Jackson Merrill finished in this poll?
Bottom.
He didn't get in it.
Didn't make it.
He,
you got to be kidding me.
He didn't
me.
Even
like
get in
seventh
it.
Or something.
Not even 10th in the National
current?
League.
This is current.
Brian Kenny actually is the one that did that.
Probably.
So
don't
sounds
like
a point, man.
He's my point him. Is yeah. is. He's doing this, you know, to our great appreciation, but he seems to be doing it to, you know, very little fanfare elsewhere. And maybe that's a good thing, right? Just
yeah,
let him
under
keep
the
doing
radar.
It. Yeah. Yep. And the only thing I noticed yesterday, I mean, the home run, the first one was really something. And, you know, he dropped the bat head, and you do that to a left-hander at Petco Park or Petco Porch, look out, and he wins the game. But I just loved that he has not gotten too high or too low.
Yep.
I didn't even notice when he went into his slump, right? And his average went from, what was it, 310 to 260 in the course of a month. You didn't even hear a thing about it. And I didn't think he got too excited yesterday. It didn't seem like the moment was too big for him either. So sky's the limit, but I think we should, you know, you guys just put Christian Yelich and Corey Seager on him. You put an MVP and a World Series MVP on him. That's a lot to ask.
For much, my
that's
man.
A lot to ask.
And can I just say, you're right. What he doesn't know what he doesn't know yet, yeah. And that's working for him.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Annie was obviously listening. Thank you to Ben and Woods when I teased one of our topics of the show today. So I'll bring it up early here. And I don't think anyone would disagree with this. There is something different about the 2024 Padres than last year's team. How could there not be in certain ways? But yeah, more walk-off wins, come-from-behind wins, extra inning wins, better run win record in one-run games. So if we all accept that there's something different, the question is, to whom or what do you most attribute those changes? And since Annie obviously gave it a little bit of thought, is it the manager? Is it certain players? Where is this change in attitude coming from?
I think theoretically it could be a lot of different things, and I don't think any of us really know for certain. I think that I know that over the offseason and coming into spring training, there was talk among the players, and it was written about that Manny can't just be the leader. This can't all just be on Manny. So there were guys like Jake Cronenworth. There were guys like Jurickson. Obviously, you have Joe. Just different leaders around the clubhouse that said, we have to shoulder some of this load in terms of getting some of the messaging out and making sure we're showing, making sure we're getting the work in, everything like that. So I think that, plus I think being embarrassed last year has quite a bit to do with it. They don't want to have that following them around like it did last year. I think Mike Schilt and the more communication, more talking has helped. And then I just think some of it might just be the roster construction, right? A little bit of just the scrappy player, along with maybe like you guys talked about earlier, who you lost and who you gained. But it's hard to say for sure, right? Like what it is.
Yeah, I mentioned that on our show that losing Juan Soto is not a good thing for any team. But I do think it woke some players up on the Padres realizing we can't wait around for Juan Soto to do something for us like we may have done last year a little bit, Craig, in just hoping, okay, eventually we're going to get that three-run home run because of the guys we have at the top of our lineup. I feel like you're seeing more battling from everybody in the Padres lineup, knowing, hey, if I don't do it in the eighth spot, we're not going to get it somewhere. So I think that's part of it.
It is, absolutely. I heard this question when you asked it this morning and really started thinking about it because I think it's very difficult.
I was at home pondering it for 10 extra minutes.
I don't blame
that's
you.
That's where you were.
That's
right.
Where you were.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one to be sure because I think it's very difficult to pin it on any one person. And if you were going to do it and honor your question very exactly, the answer has to be A.J. Preller. It has to be A.J. Preller because he reconstructed this roster for almost $100 million less. He had to replace Juan Soto. Now, did he know he was going to replace him copy-paste almost exactly for production with Jurickson Profar at 1/30th of the cost? Of course he did not. That was an incredibly lucky thing that happened in his favor. But every decision he's made in the starting rotation has worked. Cease is good. King is good. Waldron is now one of the biggest values in baseball at this point of the season. And he changed from a homer, walk, strikeout-oriented lineup to bringing in contact players like Solano, like Arise, who have completely changed, and Merrill, who have changed the fabric of the way the team attacks. So while I could do, and probably hopefully we'll talk about Suarez later, I think he's the single difference in terms of one player, it's Suarez. But in terms of if you had to give somebody the plaudits, I think it has to be AJ.
Are we overlooking, Chris, the obvious choice? The guy who, you know, it's instantly when he arrived last year they started playing better and now has put together MVP-type numbers in Jurickson Profar as being the difference on this team.
I will tell you that the same article that didn't list Jackson Merrill in the top 10 for Rookie of the Year did have Jurickson Profar fourth. And let's be honest about this. Is there anyone who could have remotely imagined that? Least of all, maybe Jurickson Profar. First, the other thing is, it really amazes me. I can't pour too much cold water on this because we're so feeling so good right now. But last year's team finished 2 games over .500, and this year's team is 2 games over .500. And this year's team, just last week, we were talking about the lack of, you know, power, and we have too many contact hitters, and we're not hitting with enough slug, and we're not getting the ball in the air. We were looking for all of the fixes for this team. Now they go 5-2, and all of a sudden, apparently, everything's fixed. So I don't know that that's the case. Maybe if we go 5-2 again next week, I'll be happy to say that this year's team is a whole lot more different than last year. But to answer your question, I think it is just the mixture of the players. I don't know that last year's team got along perfectly well. I was never in that clubhouse after a game or never on a flight and a road trip, but I just didn't see last year's team pulling for one another the way this year's team does.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to quantify, but it's just something I perceive watching them play and watching them go about their business.
Woods, how much credit does Mike Schilt get?
I think he gets
really brought him up.
You know, I think he gets a good amount, but I kind of learned my lesson with Bob Melvin because I'll never forget the day when we got Bob Melvin. And I thought to myself, that's it. The missing piece. That's it. it's done. It's over. And, you know, obviously a good first year, one of the most fun times we've all ever had as a show, as a station, going through that run was incredible. But then to watch it fall off the table, you know my thing this year, and I see a lot of it, and it's, I think people look at it and say, oh, Woodsy's defending the manager who comes on their show every Friday. No, it's not. I put most of last year on the players, and I put most of the shortcomings this season on the players. You know, guys are paid very well to execute, and the lack of execution sometimes is what kills me, and the lack of options. I feel bad for Mike Schilt sometimes when you go, well, fire this guy to the sun, fire this guy to the sun, fire this guy to the sun. No high leverage for him, no high leverage for him. Well, you can't just throw Bobby fastballs and Estrada every day, even though we've tried to throw Suarez every single day. I understand why he does it. There's sometimes the weapons just aren't there and the execution's not there. So I give Schilt credit, though. I mean, dude, nobody rides for their players harder than that guy. Nobody. And if I'm a player, I love it. But I feel like he also holds them accountable, too. I feel like he's a good communicator. He rides for his team. So I do give him a lot of credit.
One of the weekly topics here on the 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza, are trades, trade rumors, trade talks. And we almost always approach them by, who do you want to get? Is it, where do you want to target? Is it Garrett Crochet? And this week it was reported in The Athletic that the top target is now a right-handed relief arm. But I want to approach it a little differently this week. And it was also reported in that same piece by Dennis Lynn that we're not certain who A.J. Preller is even allowed to trade from top management, from Eric Kinsella and Eric Grubner. Are there untouchables? So let me ask you guys, you know, if you're in charge and you're looking at the top four prospects in the Padres minor league system, Ethan Salas, Leodalis DeVries, Dylan Lesko, Robbie Snelling, who is and is not untouchable right now? And I'll start with the prospect hater to my right.
Yeah, right.
Chris Ella, to see if anybody is untouchable in Chris's mind.
Yeah, right. Let them all go.
Have you heard of those guys before that he just brought up?
Robert Salas? Yeah, I've heard of them, but barely. I don't know. The top prospect in the Oakland A's organization for the last several years was the kid who hit two home runs just concluded series.
Soderstrom.
He had one home run on the year coming in. It's not like the guy has been a breakout superstar. You know me, prospects are prospects. So, but I got to believe that some of these guys are untouchable.
Sure.
Just because I think the Padres just feel like the fan base and the feeling around baseball would be too strong if they parted with a couple of these guys. So, I you know me, though. I mean, whatever it takes to win. I just worry that if they get a bat, I'm the one who wants a bat. Everybody else wants an arm. But if they get a bat, maybe they trade somebody who's actually in the lineup now to get a better bat so that they don't create a log jam and just leave the prospects alone.
Well, AJ is creative. There's no doubt about that. Annie, you know, and this is just an opinion, but based on what you hear about the prospects, I mean, who are your untouchables, if any?
Well, first of all, that's correct. Like, AJ Preller doesn't have just carte blanche to just move anyone, right? It's got to go through the proper channels of saying it's all right or not all right, right? So I would think that they don't want to move Leodalis DeVries. I would think that they don't want to move Ethan Salas. I guess those would be the two that I would say, okay, maybe not. Maybe those would be my only two.
Let me throw this to everyone as well. And Woods, who is the one who has made the evaluations that makes Ethan Salas and Leodalis DeVries untouchable, though? It's A.J. Preller.
Sure.
It's because he said,
his team, yeah,
these are the guys. If A.J. went to Eric Kinsella and said, you know what, I don't like what I've seen lately. I think we can get more value in trading someone.
Which has happened before. Guaranteed.
I mean, who's the guy who's the one that's providing these evaluations to begin with, that they're so high on Ethan Salas, that he's the number one prospect in the system, that Leodalis DeVries is so great? It's A.J. Preller. That's the word where it's coming from to begin with. So why couldn't he change his mind at any moment that he wants to?
You know, he absolutely could, and we've seen that. I'm sure that's happened a bunch. Like, ooh, everybody's still high on him. Actually, I don't like what I've seen. I don't like how he carries it, whatever, how he's carrying himself this season. I feel like the Padres have given chances to guys. I do, and given some guys enough rope. And there's other guys where I look at it and go, might have been too quick there. But there's still guys that we haven't really. I mean, think about Graham Pauly. I mean, Graham Pauly is I don't know how he's doing now, but when he got back down to El Paso, he was smoking the baseball. He's kind of got that guy that you look at and go, is he a 4A guy for his entire life? Somebody may want him and want to develop him. There's Lesko and Snelling, and I don't know that either of those guys are untouchable right now based on really how they've pitched this season. And then there's other names that pop up, and you go, this guy's flying under the radar. And Sandridge, who just got promoted to Triple A, I mean, that's like a guy I look at, and I saw his peripherals, and I'm like, good God, yeah, let's keep him. You know, so it's weird how it can change from almost month to month.
Well, example of someone who was untouchable maybe 2 years ago, eventually was sold for almost nothing last year. It's actually pitching quite well in the big leagues this year, and that's Ryan Weathers.
Ryan Weathers, yeah.
With the Miami Marlins. And now it's just half a season, but, you know, the fortunes and fickle feelings, Craig, about minor leaguers can change pretty quickly.
It is always true that you should trade literally every single player in your minor leagues that's not going to be a star affordably in the major leagues. Yeah. Unfortunately, you don't get to find out beforehand which guy is going to be a superstar and which guy isn't. And that is the crazy game that these guys have to play each and every day. Personally, I feel like I have to keep waving this flag and reminding everyone that the Padres already made the biggest trade of the season and the second biggest trade of the season. Look around all of Major League Baseball and the two big trades, the Padres made them, and they cleared out 8 players from their minor leagues to get those 2 guys here in San Diego, 7 and Steven Wilson, to be exact. So that level, I was 100 billion zillion percent happy to move. When you talk about those 4 guys, it's going to hurt if they trade any. They will not trade Salas and DeVries.
I don't think they will either.
And just to kind of push on a little of what you said, they gave their entire international signing bonus 2 years ago to Salas and all of it last year to DeVries, and all of the rest of the sports world believes that they are great prospects and they're 17 and 18 years old. So you just don't give up on that. And I don't think you give up on Snelling and Lesko either, because each time we've cleaned the system out, we've had a losing year the next year when you needed to go down and find those guys. I think next year, at least one of those 2 pitchers is pitching for this team and doing important innings for this team.
I do believe that Ethan Salas is worth gambling on. Yeah. I know he's struggled offensively at high A this year. He's 17 years old. So hard to find a franchise catcher. And when they do work out, Buster Posey's, people like that, it gives your team an advantage over other teams that can't find that sort of player. You can't give up on someone like that at this point, at this stage, Chris.
I can.
You can.
Yeah. And I'll just say it like this. If you could trade Ethan Salas tomorrow.
There's not a player in baseball, I don't think.
There isn't one. But if there was a player that could come in and guarantee that you win the World Series this year.
There's no player. There's no guarantee.
But there's no guarantee with Ethan Salas either. My point is that if you traded Ethan Salas and the trades you made helped you win the World Series, would you care what happens to this team the next 2 or 3 years?
No. Obviously, if you could guarantee a World Series, there's no
but I can't guarantee
everything.
Ethan Salas either.
I don't think Ethan Salas is a guarantee. You just need someone who's so controllable and so good to even think, I think, about a trade like that, given the potential upside of an Ethan Salas. It's a bigger upside for him than really any other player in the minor leagues.
Also, guys, the Padres are currently in the 5th position. The 6th position is the single best position to be in the playoff bracket. We've already learned that. And their literal max upside, barring a Dodger super collapse, is 4th.
Right.
So you're talking about, at this point, this is another way to frame this argument, you're talking about selling the farm to go from 3 road games in the first round to 3 home games in the first round, and that's literally it.
When you've already been a better road team all year.
Right, and your prize, if you win, is to face the number 1 team in your league and to face the Phillies at this point in the next round. So I don't see the marginal utility of the improvement necessarily being enough to guarantee cleaning the farm, because when you get to the playoffs, any starting pitcher that you're giving up Snelling or Lesko for, they have to be one of the three guys that you're rolling in that three-game series. And I do not believe Darvish and Cease are 100% guarantees to start in a playoff series. And I think the Padres would have a third as well in King.
Speaking, but don't forget that Craig and I last week both said, let's give this team a shot before we start making a bunch of changes and trading everybody. It was the rest of the panel that last week felt we needed to trade everybody to get where we needed to go.
But again, though, you're talking about, Benny, adding a right-handed reliever, which is not going to cost you
Ethan
Salas or DeVries,
right,
or Snelling,
right,
or Lesko. It's not. So if that's what their target is, have a ball. Go, you know, Graham Pauly, nice knowing you. You know, there's other guys down there that would absolutely nice fetch.
Rosario's killing it.
Yeah, Eggie, right. And he's, you know, he's a young man, too, that mashes left-handed pitching. So I think, yeah, if we're just talking a right-handed reliever, do what you got to do, man. I will not miss it, and it won't cost you any of those guys.
All right, speaking of guys who took an international chunk of change to sign, let's talk about Adrian Morejon for a second. And obviously, he's pitching effectively. He's earning higher leverage opportunities out of the bullpen. Annie, what do you think is the best usage for Adrian Morejon, and what should the organization be looking at him going forward?
I think what they've been doing with him is good in the sense of letting him lean into the roles that he's had and giving him a little more. He's had a rocky road, and I think it's a good reminder not to give up on guys, because if he's just tapping it, he's still young. If he's tapping into it now, into what his real power is, what his strengths are as a pitcher, that's great. I mean, there's still a huge upside for Adrian Morejon. So I feel like you keep doing what you're doing with him, but just giving him a little more by a little more. Craig mentioned on our show the other day, he's reaching his innings limit for his
career
season
high.
His career high. And that makes you do kind of wonder, okay, well, how do you use him, you know, going forward? Because you want to try to get the best of him in September and into a potential playoff run.
Andy's point, I think, psychologically, Woods, he's had so many setbacks and disappointments and failures over the years, injuries to overcome. Try to let him have continued success in whatever role you can have him in for a while. So hopefully he can get through a season feeling really good about himself going into an offseason.
Yeah, he's otherworldly talent. You know, when he's right, he's otherworldly. It's nasty. And we talked about it on our show too. Like, of course the temptation is there to be like, we just put him in the seventh and Yuki slides down and Wandy slides down and that makes us deeper. I think that the kid, like I said, he's an otherworldly talent, but we've been dangled the Adrian Morejon fruit for many, many years. So I hate to be the prove it guy. But I think that's what they're doing. I mean, the Padres are saying, all right, prove it. We'll give you another shot here. Prove it. The innings limit thing. Sure. I mean, he's a young man. If he's healthy, he can certainly extend that. But it is it would keep me up at night as a manager and a general manager on how to deploy some of these guys with injury histories, with issue after issue. I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions. It's fun to just BS about it.
I shouldn't have said innings limit. He's reaching his season high. So you just don't know. It's a mystery as to how much more can he go. Exactly.
Sure. Right. But if healthy, a young pitcher, when healthy, he's got more in him.
For sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of ties back to the last question, too, Ben, because it's always tempting to buy the finished product off the shelf.
Yes.
There's a price for it. It's already in a package. You know what you've got inside, as opposed to buying the seeds and growing it in the garden yourself and seeing what's going to come up. Development versus ready-made. The Padres paid a lot of money for Yuki Matsui. They paid a decent amount of money for Wandy Peralta. And today, Adrian Morejon, who was already in their garden growing, is more reliable than either of those two pitchers if you got to a leverage situation. So it's just a reminder, because a year, 2 years ago, the trade everyone chorus was like, Jackson Merrill, get rid of this guy. We need starting pitcher X. Morejon, send him out in the next trade. We need upgrade B. And in reality, these are two very important players on this year's team. Morejon leads all relievers on this team, even Suarez, in F war. And Merrill is trending to a, you know, a 3, 3.5, 4 war season as a rookie. So it's just a reminder. And the very simple answer to the question is you do exactly what you're doing with Morahone, 1 and 2 inning stints.
But I can sense Chris wants to stick him in the starting rotation.
I do. Not this year.
Okay.
But I think he's at 4 or 5. Why did you think that?
I just could tell.
Really?
Yeah, well, you were a left-handed.
It was also the only answer that hadn't been given.
Yeah, right, yeah, fair.
So, you know, I think he's got a potential, though, as a 4 or 5 starter. So, you know, I mean, if Seth Lugo could turn from what he turned into this, you know, Michael King is doing this. Garrett Crochet is another reliever turned starter that's been remarkable. I think it's Reynaldo Lopez of Atlanta, another reliever, now really good starter. So I foresee that for Morahone.
You're a valuable member of the round table because you're a contrarian, and I can always count on you to go against the grain of everybody else, which keeps the conversation moving. Let's take our little seventh inning stretch timeout here. It's our San Diego Padres 97.3 The Fan Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Where's my camera? I can't even see where I'm supposed to be looking at. Yesterday was opening day at the fair. So the question today, Craig, I'll start with you.
Oh,
fair. Is it the rides, games, food, exhibits, barnyard animals?
The hot tub exhibit.
Right.
Please walk
by the hot tub exhibit every single year.
Every year. My mother-in-law bought one.
Did
the only human I've ever seen buy something like that at the fair. She did it.
Yeah, I will show my age, and I will say it's the exhibits. No. I love going into the photography exhibit. Yeah. Every year, I love to see the art. I think it's especially that photo. There's a whole row, and you just see so many beautiful, not only pictures, but pictures of our region. So that's something I always enjoy. It's quiet. It's a little bit cooler, so it's a lovely break.
Right through the racetrack, if you ever go through the paddock.
Exactly.
And find the photography.
Exactly. Yeah, up there where you'd be placing your bets is instead where you can see all of the different beautiful art displays, photography, sculpture, everything else that's there every single year. So, I mean, we hit everything. We hit every part of it. My son's finally aged out of all the carny rides, which is nice. The Mike Schilt roller coaster there that just goes up and down and up and down.
Rode it yesterday.
They actually have one called that this summer. That would be a big seller, I think.
The Schilty.
Come ride those Mike Schilt roller coaster.
The puppy coaster.
But yeah, I'm an exhibition guy.
Woods, we know that your son Taylor is a ride junkie.
We found that out
on our show.
Yeah,
nuts. I know you like the food.
You
stole the virtues of your corn dog for about 7 minutes this morning.
It really was. If you do go this year, get the big corn, the big like foot long one. It tasted better. It was great. We like the fair a lot in my house. My wife is a. She always drags me to the flowers exhibit because she grows roses.
Nice
so her dream is to have one in there, and that's what she's working toward right now. So
blue ribbon winner.
Yeah, blue ribbon winner. I go every year and see them all. And but my kids like the petting zoo too. I mean, they love it, man. You cannot get. I know it's
is that the barnyard animals?
The barnyard animals. They love that.
There's aroma.
But
4-H.
The rides. I mean. I'm a bigger guy, and it was a little dicey riding the rides yesterday. I feel a little domed out by it, but just food. It's the food at the fair.
Annie?
For me, it used to be the rides. Now I'm a little domed out about the rides, too. It is 1,000% people watching. It is that.
Good one.
Now, but I would also say now it's probably like watching the salad chopper exhibition.
Oh, it's so good,
you know what I mean?
Man.
Things like that.
I'll end up with some pans this year.
The little mic, and they're so talented. You should have your own radio show.
Yeah,
you can carry in a conversation with no one for like 4 hours here just talking the virtues of your salad chopper.
I'm going to end up with knives.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'll end up with knives and some pots and pans.
They're so talented.
Yeah.
They're so underappreciated and how good they are.
Yeah,
great rhythm, doesn't miss a beat, and you're just wowed by it.
Along
like, it can
lines,
chop all of that quick.
The guy who sells snacks outside Petco Park and records his old spiel, take it into the park.
Yeah, he's great.
Keep it sealed.
Yeah.
Completely legal. Take it into the park. Very talented people.
100%.
Those buskers out there. Chris, you're fair fun.
Yeah, I like to eat the hot dog coming out of the ballpark too, Ben. Yeah. Don't forget about those guys that are working hard late into the night, wrapping their hot dogs in bacon and serving them on my way to the car.
There's nothing,
nothing like grabbing a hot dog on the way to the car after a good ball game.
I was walking by the other day and they were talking about the differences in price. They were really selling it, so I was like, all right, okay.
Yeah, everything's about the food for me. You've known me long enough, so it's round table right there. It speaks for itself. I just like the food. So, that's really all I like at the fair.
So when I was a kid,
sorry about that. I don't go on any of those rides. Scare the daylights out of me. Anytime you have to wheel a ride in and
put it together,
and use a nut and a bolt to screw it into the ground, and then tell me that it's safe. No, not for me.
So when I was a kid, I must have been a nightmare to my parents, because when it wasn't my money, I loved those games.
Yeah.
The carnival games, trying to win the prizes.
Yeah,
I was obsessed. I could have spent all day trying to win the smallest of stuffed animals, trade them up for the medium, trade them up for the large. Now that it's my own money, it's a little harder of a sell to play some of those games that are impossible to win.
You know, there's people who practice all year. They figure out the, why don't you do that, Ben? And then
only
take, go
$5
to
per ring toss.
The tiny
build
basketball
a ring
hoop,
toss. Yeah.
The catapult of the frog onto the lily pad. The see if you can shoot out the entire star with the water
the BB gun
thing. I mean, I could have done that all day long, and
please,
I have no idea
$20
how much the cost escalates.
$20 doesn't go anywhere.
Bo did
the little shot yesterday. He made the first three, and the guy said, "Let's try again. You get the bigger prize." He goes, "No problem." Makes the fourth one. Makes the fifth one, misses the sixth, has to settle for the medium prize, but he got dad
made
for...
made 5 out of 6?
They made 5 out of 6.
Wow.
It's pretty good.
How much did that cost you?
I have no... whatever the tickets are. $1 a piece, $5 a piece. I have no idea. Probably $40. I have no idea. They put it on a card, so you don't know.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to baseball. Let's look ahead. Padres heading to New York and Philadelphia on their next road trip. We've pretty much heard that they are not going to make any changes to their starting rotation yet. Yu Darvish is going to throw a session, might be back at the end of the road trip, but it looks like Adam Mazur is getting another start. Craig, is that a good idea that Adam Mazur is going to get a third opportunity after he got pretty figured out in his last time to the mound?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't want to forfeit the game, and I think a bullpen game is a bad idea too. So I'll go ahead and roll Mazur out there one more time. I mean, this is the bottom of the Padres depth right now.
Now, I brought up the scenario that if you is really possibly coming back by the end of the road trip, if you moved everybody up a day because of the off day, Thursday off day, you could push all the way back to next Tuesday, the next time you needed a fifth starter, a.k.a. Mazur. Could you get you ready in time by Tuesday? I don't know. I don't know what the medicals look like, but they seem determined that it's going to be Mazur on Saturday in game two of that series. You're okay with that, Woods?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what choice do we have? You kind of let the chips fall where they may and hope, you know, his first outing, he doesn't get a ton of swing and miss. But if they hit the ball on the ground like they did in that first game and you roll some double plays, and I mean, that's not a strategy you can employ for your entire career, and obviously was a little bit exposed in his next start. But, yeah, man, give him another shot. Give him another shot. Let's see. Sometimes the offense is going to have to pick up the pitching staff, and the pitching staff has picked up the offense a lot this season as well. So you go out and do what you're supposed to do against a not-great Mets team, you should be okay.
Annie, as Craig said, they can't really afford a bullpen day, but if you throw Mazur and he doesn't make it through two innings, you're just forced onto a bullpen
day. That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, so you know, it's a risk either way.
I think you give him Mazur another shot. Mm-hmm. If you's going to be out longer, or it looks like you're going to need, if it doesn't work out with Mazur, I think you shuffle. Like you said, they have a lot of off days coming up, I think, over the next month or two, or up until the All-Star break.
No, they do. You're right. The next few weeks.
So maybe you can kind of use that to your advantage in some way and shuffle the rotation a little bit.
Yeah, they have. I mean, I don't know exactly how many off days they have, but I pointed out this week, they've played 10% more games than like the Atlanta Braves
this
point in the season.
Yeah, that's weird.
They've played 10% more games, just some other teams who have had rainouts, who didn't go to Korea, obviously, to start the season. So there will be more off days. Do you use one of them to try to push your rotation back a little bit?
No, now entering Chris Ello's starting rotation, Adrian Morejon. Why can't he start? Why can't he start Saturday in New York and give you four innings or maybe five? I don't know. I mean, I haven't looked at he's pitched there this week.
But you feel better about it than Mazur if you had to win the game.
Here's the one thing I would say. Moving everybody up. In this day and age, I can't imagine they would ever do it. I mean, Michael King, for some reason, had to come out of that game yesterday because he'd thrown 98 pitches, never mind that nobody could hit him. I the analytics have driven me
two guys
off.
Did.
You know, I am
back to back.
I've so much had it with the analytics and the babying of pitchers. I really truly have. I mean, because you're in another time and place. Yeah, you tell everybody we're moving up a day and we're going to skip Mazur one time.
Sure.
But oh my goodness, you'd be throwing the whole season out the window, and you'd be criticized from here to, you know, the next season if you, God forbid, move everybody up a day in the rotation one time through the rotation, you know.
Right.
So, no.
Time for the
Motorhome.
Last question here on our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented. Thank you again by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It's Ben's hypothetical of the week.
Oh,
not real world situation, but here's what it is.
Hypothetical coming.
No.
All right.
My wife's favorite when I do hypotheticals.
You are playing the role of the Padres general manager in this scenario. And you are already planning for the offseason. You've been told by Eric Kitsenda and Eric Rupner. You have about $100 to $150 million to spend on a free agent contract, but you got to target just one guy.
Hmm.
Is it going to Ha-Sun Kim, Luis Arraez, Dylan Cease, Michael King, Jackson Merrill with an early deal, or are you looking outside the organization? Who do you want to lock up if you have that opportunity right now of one of the players who's not going to be with the Padres after either this season, maybe next season, or maybe 5-6 years from now?
All those guys you mentioned have...
Kim is a free agent.
Kim's a free agent. He's the only one.
Cease and King have control one more year.
One more season.
Arraez has one more year.
Yeah.
Jackson Merrill has plenty of time.
Right.
Could be getting more and more expensive as you go. You might be able to get a deal for him right now if you use that money right away on him.
But you're talking like $30 million a year? What?
I'd spread it out over 10 years, or you can spread it over 3 years. I'm just saying, this is your budget. Craig's shaking his head.
I'm just like, you're
shaking his head.
So difficult.
It's difficult.
I mean, because it's deeply hypothetical, too. I actually don't think a 3-year, $150 million deal fits anywhere in the Padres' budget. So I think you can throw that one out because given their, we just went through this week. Like, they only have like $20 million short of the salary, the luxury tax.
They can go over next year, though. If they stay under this year, penalties are reset. You could go over. You lose Eric Hosmer's salary.
And if you gave a 3-year, $150 million contract, you'd be over for three straight years.
I mean, maybe. I mean,
you just can't do that.
Who's a $50 million out of those guys? Are any of them $50 million?
I don't know. No. I mean, on the list of who am I going to re-up, it's extremely difficult. I don't think Kim is coming back. I just don't think that's happening. I think it's very risky to re-up King or Cease at this point. So I would lean toward Arraez as the most affordable guy that you could put into a box and feel very comfortable that for 5 or 6 years he's going to keep hitting the way he's hitting. I'd be tempted to spread it around, to be honest with you, and not lock into one more giant mega. I think the mega contracts are the thing that hurt this franchise.
I mean, prisoner of the moment, the idea of locking Jackson Merrill up right now sounds good. I don't necessarily want to see him go outside the organization with another big free agent. That hasn't been the solution yet. I'd rather keep an Arraez or a King, maybe.
Arraez, I mean, for me.
I think King is going to continue to build the innings. He could be a very valuable guy in, you know, three or 4 years as well.
Yeah.
Could get hurt next year. Yeah. You just don't know.
You don't know. But, you know, Luis Arraez, and I know the numbers at Petco, it's a bit confounding for him. But he's such a good hitter. He's such a good hitter. I don't want to see him anywhere else. He doesn't deserve to be on his fourth team in 5 years or something. He's too good. Keep him. I don't think he's going to cost you a fortune, right? He belongs here. He belongs here. He belongs near the top of the batting order, and he is a perfect fit culturally, chemistry-wise, and ability-wise. He's fantastic.
Nanny, who's who's your money?
I hate to not be the contrarian. I'll leave that to Chris, because that was my first instinct, too, was Arraez. I think keeping any of those guys is great.
Yeah.
Usually I would lean toward a pitcher, but in this case, he seems to set a tone for this lineup. They seems to make the other hitters around him want to be better as well. And so I think you keep a guy like that.
Yeah.
Chris, who are you spending your money on?
I love Arraez. I mean, you know that. And that's probably contrary to the contrarian that I've been.
I thought you were going to say Morahone. Just give him all the money.
I'm curious because Wood said he's not going to cost a fortune. And I wonder, is the prevailing thought around the game that...
Like if he wins his third batting title in a row, is that
still
worth
won't.
Anything?
But his brand of baseball without power necessarily is not that valued if the Padres can get at least a somewhat deal on Luis Arraez or not. I mean, if his agent thinks he's worth $150, then they're going to go after that and hit the open market. But I just don't know.
I mean, if he got 150, I think it'd be a 10-year deal. Like,
yeah.
I just feel like he is a player who's going to be graded out in the teens for his value.
Not $25 million.
Right. Right, because he does not – I'm sorry to have to repeat this, but he does not add defensive value to your team. He's either an undersized first baseman or he's an underranged second baseman or he's a DH.
Which he doesn't like to do.
With low power. Yeah. So, and he also doesn't steal 40, 50 bags for you. He steals four or five. So, like, there's – he's the ultimate – one tool player, honestly, and like his tool
he's
is
really
shiny.
Good with
his
it.
His tool is really good.
No, you're right, Craig. It's hard to imagine, you know, if he comes a free agent, right, and some other team comes in with a huge offer like that, should the Padres match, you know, try to match that to keep him? As much I like him, but is it going to be worth it? Yeah. That's a great question.
I think he's like going to be $12 to $15 million a year or something. Yep. I think it's fascinating. I don't think other teams. We'll raise the price.
Because he's not a fit everywhere. He's not a fit everywhere. He's a fit here.
Well, as always, as I've learned, you're worth what one team is willing to pay you.
Yeah.
The highest amount.
For sure.
30 teams that is willing to pay you, and oftentimes it's been A.J. Preller who set that bar as high as possible for some of the players. Thank you to everyone for joining us on another edition of the Roundtable.
Am I alone in thinking the show is only 50 minutes long today?
You have to stick around for our show for the first
time. I have to stay for 10 more minutes?
Next week we could be feeling completely different about this baseball team, the way things
go.
Let's keep it rolling.
Thank you to Annie Heilbrun, Greg Elston. If you're listening live, they're coming up next on Annie and Elston. If you're listening to the replay, then they probably are not coming up next.
I hope not.
For Stephen Woods, for Chris Ello, and for Tony Gwynn Jr. lounging in some luxury New York hotel. I'm Ben Higgins. Thanks for joining us on our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. We'll talk to you next week.
Great job, Ben.
Let's take our little seventh inning stretch timeout here. It's our San Diego Padres 97.3 The Fan Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Where's my camera? I can't even see where I'm supposed to be looking at. Yesterday was opening day at the fair, so the question today, Craig, I'll start with you.
Oh,
fair. Is it the rides, games, food, exhibits, barnyard animals?
The hot tub exhibit.
Right.
Please
walk
don't
by
say
the hot tub exhibit
animals.
Every single year.
Every year. My mother-in-law bought one.
Did
the only human I've ever seen buy something like that at the fair. She did it.
Yeah, I will show my age, and I will say it's the exhibits.
No.
I love going into the photography exhibit. Yeah. Every year, I love to see the art. I think it's especially that there's a whole row, and you just see so many beautiful, not only pictures, but pictures of our region. So that's something I always enjoy. It's quiet. It's a little bit cooler, so it's a lovely break.
Right through the racetrack, if you ever go through the paddock.
Exactly.
And find the photography.
Exactly. Up there where you'd be placing your bets is instead where you can see all of the different beautiful art displays, photography, sculpture, everything else that's there every single year. So, I mean, we hit everything. We hit every part of it. My son's finally aged out of all the carny rides, which is nice. The Mike Schilt roller coaster there that just goes up and down and up and down.
Rode it yesterday.
They actually have one called that this summer. That would be a big seller, I think.
The Schilty.
Come ride those Mike Schilt roller coaster.
The puppy coaster.
But yeah, I'm an exhibition guy.
Woods, we know that your son Taylor is a ride junkie.
We found that out on
our show.
Yeah,
went nuts.
I know you like the food.
You
stole the virtues of your corn dog for about 7 minutes this morning.
It really was. If you do go this year, get the big corn, the big like foot long one. It tasted better. It was great. We like the fair a lot in my house. My wife is a. She always drags me to the flowers exhibit because she grows roses.
Nice
so her dream is to have one in there, and that's what she's working toward right now. So
blue ribbon winner.
Yeah, blue ribbon winner. I go every year and see them all. But my kids like the petting zoo too. I mean, they love it, man. You cannot get. I know it's
is that the barnyard animals?
The barnyard animals. They love that.
There's aroma.
But
4-H.
The rides. I mean. I'm a bigger guy, and it was a little dicey riding the rides yesterday. I feel a little domed out by it, but just food. It's the food at the fair.
Annie?
For me, it used to be the rides. Now I'm a little domed out about the rides, too. It is 1,000% people watching.
People
watching. It is that.
Good one.
Now, but I would also say now it's probably like watching the salad chopper exhibition.
Oh, it's so good,
you know
good,
what I mean?
Man.
Things like that.
I'll end with
the
up
little,
with some pans
the little,
this year.
The little mic, and they're so talented. I go, you should have your own radio show.
Yeah,
you can carry on a conversation with no one for like 4 hours here just talking the virtues of your salad chopper.
I'm going to end up with
never
knives. Yeah, I'll end up with knives and some pasta. pots and pans.
They're so talented. Yeah. They're so underappreciated and how good they are.
Yeah. Great rhythm, doesn't miss a beat, and you're just wowed by it. Like, it can chop all of that quick.
The guy who sells snacks outside Petco Park and records his old spiel, take it into the park.
Yeah, he's great.
Keep it sealed, completely legal, take it into the park. Very talented people, 100%. Those buskers out there. Chris, you're fair fun.
Yeah, I like to eat the hot dog coming out of the ballpark too, Ben. Yep. Don't forget about those guys that are working hard late into the night, wrapping their hot dogs in bacon and serving them on my way to the car.
There's nothing,
nothing like grabbing a hot dog on the way to the car after a good ball game.
I was walking by the other day and they were talking about the differences in price. They were really selling it, so I was like, all right, okay.
Yeah, everything's about the food for me. You've known me long enough, so it's round table right there. Yeah. It speaks for itself. You know, I just like the food. That's really all I like at the fair.
So when I was a kid,
sorry about that. I don't go on any of those rides. Scare the daylights out of me. Anytime you have to wheel a ride in and
put it together,
and use a nut and a bolt to screw it into the ground, and then tell me that it's safe. No, not from me.
So when I was a kid, I must have been a nightmare to my parents, because when it wasn't my money, I loved those games.
Yeah.
The carnival games, trying to win the prizes.
Yeah,
I was obsessed. I could have spent all day trying to win the smallest of stuffed animals, trade them up for the medium, trade them up for the large. Now that it's my own money, it's a little harder of a sell. To play some of those games that are impossible to win.
You know, there's people who practice all year. They figure out why don't you do that, Ben? And then go
$5 per ring toss.
The tiny basketball
a ring toss.
The catapult of the frog onto the lily pad. See if you can shoot out the entire star with the water
BB gun
thing. I mean, I could have done that all day long, and
please,
I have no idea
$20
how much the cost escalates.
$20 doesn't go anywhere. Did the little
tries.
The little shot yesterday. He made the first three, and the guy said, let's try again. You get the bigger prize. He goes, no problem. Makes the fourth one, makes the fifth one, misses the sixth, has to settle for the medium prize, but he got dad
made
for...
made 5 out of 6?
They made 5 out of 6. It's pretty good.
How much did that cost you?
I have no... whatever the tickets are, $1 a piece, $5 a piece, I have no idea. Probably $40. I have no idea. They put it on a card so you don't know.
All right, let's get back to baseball. Let's look ahead. Padres heading to New York and Philadelphia on their next road trip. We've pretty much heard that they are not going to make any changes to their starting rotation yet. Yu Darvish is going to throw a session, might be back at the end of the road trip, but it looks like Adam Mazur is getting another start. Craig, is that a good idea that Adam Mazur is going to get a third opportunity after he got pretty figured out in his last time to the mound?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't want to forfeit the game, and I think a bullpen game is a bad idea too. So I'll go ahead and roll Mazur out there. One more time. I mean, this is the bottom of the Padres' depth right now.
Now, I brought up the scenario that if you is really possibly coming back by the end of the road trip, if you moved everybody up a day because of the off day, Thursday off day, you could push all the way back to next Tuesday, the next time you needed a fifth starter, a.k.a. Mazur. Could you get you ready in time by Tuesday? I don't know. I don't know what the medicals look like, but they seem determined that it's going to be Mazur on Saturday in game two of that series. You're okay with that, Woods?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what choice do we have? You kind of let the chips fall where they may and hope, you know, his first outing, he doesn't get a ton of swing and miss. But if they hit the ball on the ground like they did in that first game and you roll some double plays, and I mean, that's not a strategy you can employ for your entire career, and obviously was a little bit exposed in his next start. But, yeah, man, give him another shot. Give him another shot. Let's see. Sometimes the offense is going to have to pick up the pitching staff, and the pitching staff has picked up the offense a lot this season as well. So you go out and do what you're supposed to do against a not-great Mets team, you should be okay.
Annie, as Craig said, they can't really afford a bullpen day, but if you throw Mazur and he doesn't make it through two innings, you're just forced onto a bullpen
day. That's true. Yeah.
Anyway, so you know, it's a risk either way.
I think you give him Mazur another shot. Mm-hmm. If you's going to be out longer, or it looks like you're going to need, if it doesn't work out with Mazur, I think you shuffle. Like you said, they have a lot of off days coming up, I think, over the next month or two, or up until the All-Star break.
No, they do. You're right. The next few weeks.
So maybe you can kind of use that to your advantage in some way and shuffle the rotation a little bit.
Yeah, they have. I mean, I don't know exactly how many off days they have, but I pointed out this week, they've played 10% more games than like the Atlanta Braves
at
this point in the season.
Yeah, that's weird.
They've played 10% more games. Just some other teams who have had rainouts, who didn't go to Korea, obviously, to start the season. So there will be more off days. Do you use one of them to try to push your rotation back a little bit?
No, now entering Crisello's starting rotation, Adrian Morejon. Why can't he start? Why can't he start Saturday in New York and give you four innings or maybe five? I don't know. I mean, I haven't looked at he's pitched there this week.
But I feel better about it than Mazur if you had to win
so.
The game.
Here's the one thing I would say. Moving everybody up in this day and age, I can't imagine they would ever do it. I mean, Michael King, for some reason, had to come out of that game yesterday because he'd thrown 98 pitches. Never mind that nobody could hit him. I the analytics have driven me
two guys
off.
Yeah.
You know, I am
back to back.
I've so much had it with the analytics and the babying of pitchers. I really truly have. I mean, because you're in another time and place. Yeah, you tell everybody we're moving up a day and we're going to skip Mazur one time.
Sure.
But, oh, my goodness, you'd be throwing the whole season out the window and you'd be criticized from here to, you know, the next season if you, God forbid, move everybody up a day in the rotation one time through the rotation, you know.
Right.
So, no.
Time for the
Morejon.
Last question here on our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented. Thank you again by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It's Ben's hypothetical of the week.
Oh,
not real world situation, but here's what it is.
Hypothetical coming.
No.
All right.
My wife's favorite when I do hypotheticals.
You are playing the role of the Padres general manager in this scenario. And you are already planning for the offseason. You've been told by Eric Kinsenda and Eric Rupner. You have about $100 to $150 million to spend on a free agent contract, but you got to target just one guy.
Hmm.
Is it going to Ha-Sung Kim, Luis Arraez, Dylan Cease, Michael King, Jackson Merrill with an early deal, or are you looking outside the organization? Who do you want to lock up if you have that opportunity right now of one of the players who's not going to be with the Padres after either this season, maybe next season, or maybe 5-6 years from now?
All those guys you mentioned have...
Kim is a free agent.
Kim's a free agent. He's the only one.
Cease and King have control one more year.
One more season.
Arraez has one more year.
Yeah.
Jackson Merrill has plenty of time.
Right.
Could be getting more and more expensive as you go. You might be able to get a deal for him right now if you use that money right away on him.
But you're talking like $30 million a year? What?
I'd spread it out over 10 years, or you can spread it over 3 years. I'm just saying, this is your budget. Craig's shaking his head.
I'm just like, you're
shaking his head.
So difficult.
It's difficult.
I mean, because it's deeply hypothetical, too. I actually don't think a 3-year, $150 million deal fits anywhere in the Padres' budget. So I think you can throw that one out because given their, we just went through this week. Like, they only have like $20 million short of the salary, the luxury tax.
They can go over next year, though. If they stay under this year, penalties are reset. You could go over. You lose Eric Hosmer's salary.
And if you gave a 3-year, $150 million contract, you'd be over for three straight years.
Who's a 50 million out of those guys? Are any of them $50 million?
I don't know. No. I mean, on the list of who am I going to re-up, it's extremely difficult. I don't think Kim is coming back. I just don't think that's happening. I think it's very risky to re-up King or Cease at this point. So I would lean toward Arraez as the most affordable guy that you could put into a box and feel very comfortable that for 5 or 6 years he's going to keep hitting the way he's hitting. I'd be tempted to spread it around, to be honest with you, and not lock into one more giant mega. I think the mega contracts are the thing that hurt this franchise.
I mean, prisoner of the moment, the idea of locking Jackson Merrill up right now sounds good. I don't necessarily want to see him go outside the organization with another big free agent. That hasn't been the solution yet. I'd rather keep an Arraez or a King, maybe.
Arraez for me.
I think King is going to continue to build the innings. He could be a very valuable guy in, you know, three or 4 years as well.
Yeah.
He
could get hurt next year. Yeah. You just don't know.
You don't know, but, you know, Luis Arraez, and I know the numbers at Petco, it's a bit confounding for him, but he's such a good hitter. He's such a good hitter. I don't want to see him anywhere else. He doesn't deserve to be on his fourth team in 5 years or something. He's too good. Keep him. I don't think he's going to cost you a fortune, right? He belongs here. He belongs here. He belongs near the top of the batting order, and he is a perfect fit culturally, chemistry-wise, and ability-wise. He's fantastic.
Nanny, who's your money?
I hate to not be the contrarian. I'll leave that to Chris because that was my first instinct, too, was Arraez. I think keeping any of those guys is great.
Yeah.
Usually I would lean toward a pitcher, but in this case, he seems to set a tone for this lineup. They seems to make the other hitters around him want to be better as well. And so I think you keep a guy like that.
Yeah. Chris, who are you spending your money
on? I love Arise. I mean, Arise, you know that. And that's probably contrary to the contrarian that I've been.
I thought you were going to say Mora Hone. Just give him on the money.
I'm curious because Wood said he's not going to cost a fortune. And I wonder, is the prevailing thought around the game that...
Like if he wins his third batting title in a row, is that worth anything?
But his brand of baseball without power necessarily is not that valued if the Padres can get at least a somewhat deal on Luis Arraez or not. I mean, if his agent thinks he's worth 150, then they're going to go after that and hit the open market. But I just don't know.
I mean, if he got 150, I think it'd be a 10-year deal. Like, yeah. I just feel like he is a player who's going to be graded out in the teens for his value.
Not $25 million.
Right, because he does not – I'm sorry to have to repeat this, but he does not add defensive value to your team. He's either an undersized first baseman or he's an underranged second baseman, or he's a DH.
Which he doesn't like to do.
With low power. Yeah. So, and he also doesn't steal 40, 50 bags for you. He steals four or five. So, like, he's the ultimate – one tool player, honestly, and like his tool
he's
is
really
shiny.
Good with
his
it.
Tool is really good.
No, you're right, Craig. It's hard to imagine, you know, if he comes a free agent, right, and some other team comes in with a huge offer like that, should the Padres match, you know, try to match that to keep him? As much I like him, but is it going to be worth it? Yeah. That's a great question.
I think he's like going to be $12 to $15 million a year or something. Yep. I think it's fascinating. I don't think other teams. We'll raise the price.
Because he's not a fit everywhere. He's not a fit everywhere. He's a fit here.
Well, as always, as I've learned, you're worth what one team is willing to pay you.
Yeah.
The highest amount.
For sure.
30 teams that is willing to pay you, and oftentimes it's been A.J. Preller who set that bar as high as possible for some of the players. Thank you to everyone for joining us on another edition of the Roundtable.
Am I alone in thinking the show is only 50 minutes long today?
You have to stick around for our show for the first
time. I have to stay for 10 more minutes?
Next week we could be feeling completely different about this baseball team, the way things
go.
Let's keep it rolling.
Thank you to Annie Heilbrun, Greg Elston. If you're listening live, they're coming up next on Annie and Elston. If you're listening to the replay, then they probably are not coming up next.
I hope not.
For Stephen Woods, for Chris Ello, and for Tony Gwynn Jr. lounging in some luxury New York hotel. I'm Ben Higgins. Thanks for joining us on our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. We'll talk to you next week.
Great job, Ben.